Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week we bring on Moss Dolls and Prawn Mouse to talk all things toys and their dolls, and the Slug Gum are all fantastic pieces. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want to follow us along and support the show in a free way, like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to jump on and support the show even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where you get extra episodes, all kinds of goodies. That's where it's at. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Welcome to Toys on Tap. Really pumped that you guys are on. We start out every episode the same. Please introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello, I'm Moss Dolls. My name is Monica, and this is Moss Dolls & Co. So
yeah. I'm Prawn Mouse. I do illustration. I'm an artist, and I also designed and sculpted Slug Gum.
And we were just talking about that before the recording. So, holy geez. Like I've said, I love the Australian toy scene and what's happening there, and how, like, this is not a toy store. It's pushed a community forward. And I have a lot of toys from, like, Titty Beans or toys from Shed Quarters. And I have a box that got shipped to me from AJ, and it's going to Designer Con this year. And so I really love everything Australia, except all the spiders and stuff you've got. And so I kind of want to walk it back. Like, we're going to talk about both of your guys' lives in toys and art, but just like everyone else, we got to walk it back to childhood. What are the things you're growing up with, the toys you're playing with? How did this all kind of begin?
You start.
All right. Well, I'm a little bit younger than Monica. So I was around, like, I was a kid when, you know, Pokemon was coming out, you know, like, Digimon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Beyblades, you know, all these trends were coming out, and I was living in England at the time. So I was, like, super into, like, Beast Wars, Transformers, and my friend and I used to just lock ourselves in the, you know, in the bedroom and draw Pokemon, you know, our own versions of it. And, like, we locked all the, like, the windows and stuff so no one could spy on our ideas and stuff like that. So, like, that was, like, such a magical time in England as a kid. Just loved the Transformers. And, like, back then, you don't know that all those toys are Japanese, like, Beetleborgs. And I just recently found out that's, you know, that's just a, you know, Kamen Rider, like, you know, like, full-blown, like, Japanese TV show that was already made. And I found out, like, you know, the Power Rangers, I was fully into them, but they just kind of used the fight scenes from, like, Japan, like, the Japanese version. And I've collected toys just kind of from my childhood. Like, I've moved to different countries and my toys have always come with me, and they're very well played, you know. They're not in good condition, but, like, you know, there's a nostalgia to toys. And you know, I think, like, after meeting Monica, like, it's really inspired me to, you know, get back into it. And it's like, there's other people out there that love toys. And, you know, it's also a really really creative like medium. Like, it takes a lot of brain power to sculpt something. And Transformers blows my mind. I don't know how they ever did that. That's kind of my— we'll go into, like, Sophie B and stuff, yeah. But, like, yeah. That was kind of my childhood.
He like threw you under the bus by saying he was younger too. That's wild.
Yeah. He's cutting that out later.
Yeah, I'll edit it. Don't worry. So let's talk how Moss Dolls, what was it like for you growing up? Those types of toys, all kind of stuff.
So I grew up in Australia, but my mum came to Australia and was not able to provide like heaps and heaps and heaps of toys for us. And so I remember like not even being able to have a Barbie, like really wanting to have a Barbie, but I got all the like really cheap knockoff $2 kind of like super, super crappy kind of quality ones. But I had a few Polly Pockets. And I still remember I had two My Little Ponies, but they were probably like My Little Phonies. They weren't even real. And I remember leaving them on a train and like standing outside the train and watching the train pull out. And I could see My Little Ponies through the window still sitting on the seat. And I was like, bye-bye. You know, like, farewell.
Yeah.
And then I got like one Barbie as like a charity gift when I was young, and she was like a real Barbie, so that was like really, really special. And then I remember saving up all of my pocket money because I really wanted a Tamagotchi, and the Tamagotchi craze was going through school, and everyone had one, and they all would make little beds for them, and they would like sleep on the table in class for a very short period of time before the teacher completely got sick of that.
Yeah.
And I was able to go. And I think at the time, from memory, we didn't have like Tamagotchi, the brand itself hadn't come to Australia yet, but the knockoffs had, or like the other kind of digital pets. And so we were able to walk into, pretty sure it was like Kmart, and they had this series that I can't even find online anymore. And they were called like My Puppy, My Kitty and My Baby. And I got like the kitten one. And we've been going like down nostalgia. And I was like, I want to find just a photograph because I don't have any of my childhood toys anymore. And we can't even find photos. We found a photo of my puppy and my baby. But if anyone's listening to this and has a photograph of a My Kitty digital.
Yeah, it's like lost media. Lost. Like they've got photos and like documentation of my puppy and my baby, but my kitten or whatever.
All of these like kids from Australia, like we all had My Kitty because that was like the one you could get at Target or Kmart.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
But no one has a photo anymore. So
if I find it, you'll know. I'll ship it to you.
We'll both sleep easy.
Yeah. I was like, it was real. I didn't hallucinate.
Yeah. I remember deliberately killing my sister's Tamagotchi thing, like hiding it just long enough so it died.
Oh, and then it was like crying for help. It was like, eat me.
Which speaks to like a weird sadistic thing that could have been in me, like that's but
it was for science. You're like, what happens if
like, is there an
sadistic
afterlife?
Science, but
yeah. And so I do remember Tamagotchi, and a couple summers ago I got a bunch for volunteers in my work, and I said, hey, we're gonna have a competition, who can have this alive the longest, and whoever wins, I'll buy dinner. And I think the longest was like 3 days at most. Like we were just killing things on accident. Yeah. But that's cool. Great. I think it's cool to, especially because like the US is like the hub for some of those things. So to hear that they come to other countries, and the fact that you had digital pets that I've never even heard, like the knockoff ones or other company ones, those sound more interesting than this like amorphous blob in there. Like Tamagotchi was just a made up animal. So that's cool to hear that they had that kind of stuff. And the next step, when do we start getting rid of toys and moving into some kind of art in our lives? Like, when does that kind of shift? Because you still have childhood toys. Yeah. You don't have any of yours.
Yeah.
So who wants to go first?
Mine were all lost. Mine all I don't even know where they are anymore or even what happened to them. But I think, and I've talked to a few people about this who are doll collectors, and I think it might be, I've heard from a lot of people who had their dolls taken away, maybe a little bit too early. They still wanted to play, but they had them, you know, forcibly removed. Like, you're a grown up now. You're getting older. You can't play with these anymore. And I've heard a lot of people had that feeling that, you know, they never quite fully got it out of their system. So yeah. I was always interested in dolls and craft, like creating doll-like creatures. I liked the idea that when I was into something, like I really got into Legend of Zelda, but there was no merch, there were no figurines, there were no toys. And I guess I still had that desire, as even as a young teenager, to have a physical, tangible, you know, little memento or creature that looked like the character. So I would go to the art store and I would buy their wooden pose mannequins. You could get these little tiny little wooden dolls that were super simple. It was like a sphere for the head, a block for the body, and little little movable arms and legs. And I would buy those and I would cut out felt and I would dress them and to look like all of the little characters from Legend of Zelda. Those were my like figurines, my like early Legend of Zelda figurines. Now you can go into like most gaming stores and things, and they'll have amazing figurines and things like that, but not back then. And I really wanted to have a physical, symbol of the things I was into, the characters I liked. I really liked designing characters and drawing and illustrating. And I used to say I would be a character designer for video games. That was what I thought when I was a teenager. But then I got into fine art and illustration, but I still always liked the idea of having a doll or toy like, you know, figurine of my characters, not just on paper. So I got into collecting ball joint dolls quite soon after high school, like in university. And again, I was at an art university. I was doing fine art. And so sculpture, ceramics, those were all part of it. You would see people make little statues or statuettes that were human-like in form or something, and that was okay. So I was like, oh, I think dolls can be okay. And a lot of people, artists I was following online, were doing really amazing porcelain ball-jointed dolls that, whilst they were called dolls, they also looked very much like, you know, what you would imagine an action figure, like very poseable, very, very movable. You could put them in any position, and artists were really pushing the extent of the, you know, they would have like separate neck joints so that the neck could really, really move, and separate multiple joints just in the shoulder so that they would have this full range of movability. And then I think from that, from being interested in dolls, I started sewing for them, and I got into Japanese Blythe dolls, which are huge in Japan and now all over the world. There are huge Blythe cons in America. We've got them here in Australia called Blythe Fest, all across Europe. And it was when I went to Japan for the first time in 2016 for a Blythe con that I discovered Sophie B and Soft Vinyl and that whole scene.
Yeah.
So that was my background for that.
Can you explain, anyone listening, because we don't have any video or anything, Blythe doll, describe a Blythe doll for any listener.
Okay.
You get one?
you can probably get one, yeah.
I'll grab one.
Blythe dolls were originally actually designed by an American artist, Alison Katzman, in America, for Kenner, for the toy company Kenner. And the idea was that a Blythe doll would be the competitor to Barbie. Mm. But Blythe have really big heads.
Yeah.
And they were sort of inspired by Betty Boop, like that really big head, big eye look. So Alison Katzman said she was inspired by, I'll keep her up here, by Betty Boop. But the doll was only in production for about a year. And she was released in America, England, and Australia, and in Japan under a different name. She was called Ai Ai Chan. And just for a year, and kids didn't like her. They didn't vibe with the aesthetic. And so Kenner pulled that toy. It was like, yep, that's a fail. And it just went by the wayside and no one thought about it. And then sort of in the early 2000s, Junko Wong from Japan saw a vintage, you know, 1970s Kenner and found out the story about it and was like, don't market this to children, market this to young women in Japan who have disposable income, who are into like kawaii fashion, super into that whole aesthetic. They already, you know, love cute, love kawaii. And she was absolutely right. And so the Blythe doll had this huge resurgence of popularity and exactly as Junko Wong thought, became really, really popular and sort of captured the hearts of adult collectors rather than children. So she knew, she was like, don't market this to children as a child's toy, market this to adults as a as an adult collectible doll or toy. And it's interesting how sometimes making that choice, is this a toy for children or is this a toy for adults? And right. It can have a really big effect on the popularity or the success of a product.
Man. That I love toy education. It's so helpful for my own brain. Yeah. Okay, so now we got to go to you, but your story is a little different because you have all your toys from your childhood and they've like moved countries as well, which is insanity. Kind of walk me through when we at least put them away and then when we kind of stepped into the art realm.
Well, I've always done art ever since I was a kid. But yeah, with toys, I think the time I put them away, was pretty much as a teenager and, you know, like Guitar Hero was coming out.
Yeah.
And that changed my life, you know? So like, you know, I was fully into my PS2, video games pretty much, replaced toys at that stage. And I think because, you know, I've got that hoarder gene in me, like all my collections come with me. So, you know, I don't know. I just feel like I can't get rid of all my collections. but yeah, definitely Guitar Hero and like, you know, Tony Hawk and stuff like that, that took over my life pretty much.
Yeah.
And then from there it was guitar and stuff like that. So yeah, I think music really had an impact on me as a you know teenager. And it wasn't till, you know, I met Monica that I started getting back into toys and it's like, oh, I've got toys, you know, like I used to love toys and you know, it just sparked that you know, nostalgia and just that like, you know, that feeling of I don't know, that, you know, just being a kid and getting a new toy and like I'm like there's a whole another world of all this like really cool toy artists out there and yeah just really opened up my eyes a bit and I'm like this is a really cool medium like let's get going
and I think it like it's an interesting like soft vinyl and indie toys and designer toys is an interesting thing where it like it can appeal to someone who's into you know sweet cute Japanese fashion dolls and it can also appeal to someone who's into you know more music and skater side of things because there's designs that will appeal to both crowds or you know so like when I introduced you to soft vinyl it's like yeah we could see toys that you were really into and then there were like cuter versions that maybe I was into and there were ones that we both were like that's really well made. That's really nicely designed and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love that. I love that there is there's something that's cool about taking a break from toys and then get drawn back in because you kind of it's like almost, you ever hear the phrase like chasing the dragon? Like you'll never get as high as the first time you got high.
Yeah.
But with toys, right, when you come back, you kind of do, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think you and I are closer in age, if that's true, because when Guitar Hero and Tony Hawk Pro Skater came out, I was smitten. Like those were the thing.
Yeah.
And so the art kind of takes over for both of you and you, kind of like you have your collecting, and then when do you guys first meet to like, and then does this kind of happen where you first meet and start doing toys? How does that kind of play out?
So we met a few years after I got into soft vinyl toys and decided to become a toy maker. So that happened for me in 2016. I went to Japan for the first time, and I was there for BlytheCon as a vendor from Australia. I think we had three vendors come over from Australia who were all like seamstresses who were making clothes for the Blythe dolls. But I, you know, we went to Mandarake, and I also went to the Wonder Frog shop. So a lot of people who were collecting Blythe dolls were also collecting these funny little guys from Japan called Wonder Frogs. And there's a little store in Nakano just behind, in the back streets behind Broadway. And when I went in there for the first time, I literally had one of those like, oh, moments where I said, this is what I want. Like they have an adorable little store. It's filled with all these incredible props made by Kenzo-san, who used to be a prop maker. It's so magical. Everything looks like, you know, you've stepped into this wild mushroom forest magic place. And then all of these little toys that they make, they're open like 3 days a week for a couple of hours a day. I was like, this is the life. This is what I want. I want to have a magical little store that people are obsessed with, and I don't have to have many opening hours. I'm still chasing that dream. That's not there yet.
It's coming.
We're in the working from morning to night moment.
Yeah.
But that was when I decided, okay, I'm gonna make toys, and what is this made out of? And I started hearing about Sofubi and soft vinyl. Started that journey. And then fast forward to, we met during lockdown, actually. So COVID lockdown, Australia had some pretty serious lockdowns where you weren't even allowed, like you were allowed to leave your house for 1 hour a day for exercise, maybe at certain points. Like, and there were rules of like how far you could even travel from your house. Like it was like a 5 kilometer radius.
And they'd have like police cars, you know, like around parks and stuff, wild, like patrolling people,
making
going
sure
on walks.
You weren't, you know, walking for over your 1 hour allotted slot. Exactly. Yeah. So, and we were living pretty far apart, like on public transport, it was probably 5 hours between where we lived. So we met during that time. But luckily the government brought in this rule that if you were, because they realized after a while that people were having to be in complete isolation. So I was living completely alone up in the Blue Mountains. So that's a little bit west of Sydney, in Australia. And they brought in a rule that if you were a couple, you were allowed to, you know, break that 5 kilometer rule if the couple lived further apart. So you would come up, and it was like quite a pleasant time in the sense that we didn't have to go to work because we were in lockdown, and we could just do art. We would paint, we would create. And so immediately, you know, he knew about my toy collecting and my designs and things, and that desire to create a new toy. But at that moment I was in a lull, like I wasn't getting any success with factories or figuring out a way to have my toy made. I'd had a lot of really big hiccups along the way. And then it wasn't until we went to Japan in 2023, like 2 years ago, September, a couple of years ago, and you got to see all the toys, all the kaiju and everything. And that was when we came back, you were like, right, 100% all in.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's start making these toys. And so it really snowballed after that.
Because, before then I didn't know anything about Japan, like at all. Like she's obsessed with Japan, and I'm like, I see it now. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. Like I had heard maybe a couple little videos of, you know, like the crossing sounds,
the crossing sounds,
when you cross the road, it's like beep, you know, like, and then like going into like Family Mart or whatever, like the songs that play. That's the only like thing, like I did no research before going over there, but she's like, you're gonna love it, you're gonna love it, you know, like, and I did. It blew my mind, like, you know, just how, you know, arts, illustration, toy making is just such a big part of their culture, you know.
It was like everywhere, like
we'd just be everywhere. Walking
on the street and we'd stumble on little pop-up galleries in cafes, like pop-up art shows everywhere. And we don't see that a lot in Australia. It's usually reserved for established galleries. And there's not a huge scene for indie artists to sort of show their work. And, you know, besides, this is not a toy scene in Melbourne, there's not really much of that here. So that was nice to see that as like, oh, this is a possibility in a way that toy artists and illustrators can actually thrive.
And it, you know, I feel like in Australia there is a lot of lost potential for that, because there are a lot of buildings that are purposely left empty, like, you know, shop fronts and stuff. Because it's more beneficial financially for the owner to keep them empty for some reason. Whereas in Japan, like, if you've got an idea, if you've got a creative idea, go for it. You know, they support that and they want the arts. Like, arts bring people in, bring in tourism.
Pop-up spaces is, like, really a big thing. Like, you can have a little pop-up gallery or a pop-up cafe, or, you know, someone could just think to themselves, oh, I'm going to start a little pop-up bar. What the heck? Why not? And I'm going to run it for a few months, and then I'll do the next thing that interests me. And it's sort of possible. Whereas here, that kind of thing is tricky.
Couple hours north of us, in Newcastle, they actually did have like a council run initiative that were getting like pop-up stores going, and that did bring in a lot of people. And we just need more of that, you know. Like, and I feel like with
And that's how the With toy the, store started.
Yeah, yeah.
AJ like probably mentioned that in his interview, but I think This Is Not a Toy Store in Melbourne started through a grant and through Melbourne needing to fill empty spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were doing some toys. You take him to Japan. He sees it. All of a sudden, it's like now we're collectively the powerhouse.
Yeah.
And how does that
now we change? Do it all together.
Which is what, like, my wife, bless her and all that she is, has not a desire to want to do anything with toys. And I don't fault her for that. But man, the day that she looks at me and says, let's make a toy, you'll know. Yeah. Everyone will know. You guys kind of join forces. And what does that look like? Because then it's then COVID is done and we're kind of just getting ready to full swing this. How do you come up with Slug Boy that I love so much? And how do we push through those dolls? Like, how do we do those things?
I think like the hiccups I'd had, which is why it kind of came to like a stalemate, were that I had made my original little guy, that's him there.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Bryophyte. Yeah, it was like a little moss doll. And at that time, the only avenue I found to make it was a type of resin, but it wasn't even like the home poured resin. It was something called, I think it was like poly resin. And he's heavy. He feels like he's made out of like concrete or plaster, really, really heavy, and unfortunately very brittle. So every time someone had one, if they toppled over, all of the little mossy lichen sprouts on his head would just, you know, crack off. And so I knew I wanted him made in vinyl. And every time I found a factory and it looked like things would go ahead, something happened, like the stars were aligned against me. And I just couldn't crack into it. And then even though I had friends who were making toys and were doing really well, I just wasn't able to make it happen. It was like, now in hindsight, I say, it was meant to be. Like, if I had succeeded back then, maybe I wouldn't be doing the things I am doing now.
Right.
And so we put that aside. And I sort of just kept trying to find a factory that would make a soft vinyl toy and work with me. And I went through a few different toy and doll sculpts and prototypes. And again, they all failed. And then when we met our friend Lewis P. Morley, who lives in the Blue Mountains as well, and he was a huge prop maker in, you know, some really famous movies. Like, he worked on Star Wars and Aliens and things like that. Yeah. And he kind of got really excited about toys again and making things. And at one point he grabbed a 3D scanner so that he could use, because he's making a puppet film. And so he would scan, like he would create a life-size sculpture of something and then scan that and shrink it down to the size he needed. And he sort of heard my sad plight, like, oh, all my toys have failed. And he scanned my little Bryophyte. That was like the original size there, really little guy. And he was like, you should make him bigger. And he made like a bigger version of him. And we would 3D print that. And we tested out maybe making the joints movable, things like that. So that kind of excited both of us, like Lewis's excitement and just this like complete giving help. Like, he would sit there and print all of these bryophytes for me, completely just because he was like, I want to see you succeed. Like, this isn't something you should give up. He was so, so great.
And he was very close to cracking soft vinyl in Australia.
Really,
he was starting up a
home lab
for soft vinyl production. He had like electroplating machine.
Wait, what happened?
He gave it his all, and he couldn't do it. There's some secret. There's some secret ingredient, or I think the other thing he was saying that was a really big issue in Australia is, to get the liquid vinyl and some of that particular materials, when like Australia doesn't really support small scale production, it's all about the big things. So he would contact a company and be like, how, you know, can I buy a few liters of this stuff? And they would reply with the most astronomical. It's like, well, it's, you know, 1,000 liters or nothing or whatever. It was like huge amounts. And I think he even said at one point he managed to get 10 liters or something, and he spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and it just wasn't the right consistency, the right thing. You know, we're not 100% certain, but he wasn't able to do it. And then he would get sad, and then we would do something to like get him excited about making his toys again. And he was creating a lot of amazing things for This Is Not a Toy Store, like small, like he works with really incredible miniatures and dioramas, and he made like the miniature version of the This Is Not a Toy Store shop front for them. And anyway, Lewis became hugely integral for why Slug Gum exists as well. But do you want to tell that, like making Slug Gum out of Prawn Mouse?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of starts with Prawn Mouse. Like, during COVID, we were like in lockdown, we're video calling each other every single day, like for hours. And we would just give each other like these like art prompts and stuff. And
challenges,
like one day she like challenged me to make a creature that was like mixed with a prawn.
Half prawn, half
something. And then like I made like a watercolor, you know, artwork of a prawn mouse. And from there, like Prawn Mouse, you know, we got into zines and stuff, and like I did a bunch of artworks based off of it. And I really wanted to make a Prawn Mouse toy, but you know, I've done so many sculpts in clay and like tried to 3D model it and stuff, but like, you know, the little like legs and stuff, I'm like, you know, this will never be able to be pulled. Like, so it was just like, you know, I'd get close, but nothing felt right with it. And it, you know, it's just like, man. So one day I got like really sick. I was like, I had a really bad cold or something. And like, I just like sat down with some clay and made Slug Gum, you know, just
like that.
It was just, and it was like, I'm like, that's it, you know, let's send it off. You know, I was just like,
it just worked. Like, it was interesting. Like, after like probably months and months and months and so many different sculpt attempts at making Prawn Mouse and being like, just doesn't work. And I'd be like, oh, but this is really cute. This one works. And he'd be like, it's not, the aesthetic's not right. Something's just off. And then,
and also the idea of like, you have to pay thousands of dollars to get a toy made. So you have to be quite certain with it. And like, you know, Slug Gum's not the most like perfect thing, but like, you know, it did, there was something about it that was right. And like, yeah. I was like, when I feel like I have to trust my gut, like I've learned through art and stuff, like sometimes your first attempt at something is the best because that is what inspires you the most. Mm-hmm. Like if you try to keep perfecting something, it will get worse. it won't, you know, like, and I think with Soft Vinyl, like it has that quality, you know, you've got that, they can be quite crude or you know, rough and misshapen sometimes, or just, but that gives that I don't know, like it gives it kind of a bit of life. And even with each of the pools of the Slug Gum, like the eye stalks are slightly different. So like we've got one that was like a miss pool and like it's kind of drooping, like one of the stalks is drooping, and like she immediately took that one. She's like, that's mine.
Yeah.
Droopy. We take it everywhere.
Yeah.
I've got the
original size.
Yeah, original size. So I hand sculpted it in like Super Sculpey firm. And that stuff is like, you know,
yeah,
you
have so to, is it like this big then?
It's the original. I've got it right here.
Yeah, so he scanned the original. What am I talking about? He made the original and he was much smaller. And this was before we went to Japan. And show me, he's like really little.
Oh,
tiny.
Yeah, he's great.
Okay. And we sent that one off to the factory. It's the size difference.
Oh, yeah, that size difference is something gnarly.
Yeah. And we like sent that one off with one of the bryophytes that was like this size. So
best like 3D printed.
But we also like went over it. And so it was like there was a 3D print underneath, but over the top, we'd sort of sculpted over it. So we had like two originals. We had a hand sculpted Slug Gum and like the bryophyte. And so he was going to be like really big.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, before we send it off, we kept delaying. So before we send it up, let's just go visit Lewis and get a scan. Because I said, if we do that, nothing bad will happen. It'll be like that saying, like if you don't take an umbrella with you, it will rain. But if you take one with you, it definitely won't rain. And I was like, that's what we're going to do. We're just going to make a 3D scan. And so we went to Lewis's place while there was like he was hosting a dinner party. We're like in between like him, you know, serving all the guests. We're like, can you please scan this for us? Please, please, please. So he went down and he just like set it up. And so it wasn't even like a really meticulous, perfect scan. Cause I was like, once it's scanned, that's fine. Like then it can't be jinxed, you know, then the scan's done. And that means everything will go according to plan.
And like we've been talking to the factory, like the guy's like so onto it. And like, you know, we're like, nothing's going to go wrong at all. Like it's just here. And then
like, my obstacles, they're in the past. Nothing bad's going to happen now.
Yeah.
And we sent it off and we were like watching the tracking.
And we had like so much prep. We've like started making zines about it, you know, like,
We were like practically ready to do a Kickstarter or something. We're like, we're ready. Send us your money.
Monica's more like, you know, tell everybody like as right soon now. As anything's happening. You know, I'm like, you know,
he's like, keep it quiet.
Goal is not to sell these. The goal is to make it.
Make it and have it.
Once it's made, you have achieved your goal, because like we have had so many setbacks and stuff.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray. We're saved, DLP2. limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
So I was like, no, we can't tell anybody yet. And it was really hard to, you know,
keep it quiet
because we were very excited about our little slug gun being sent off, the Bryophyte. And
it disappeared. Like on the way to the factory, the tracking just halted. And everyone we tried to ask, it was so close. Like it was apparently about 2 hours, you know, drive or whatever from the destination. And our contact was even like, I'll go, where do I need to go? I'll go and rescue this. And we just couldn't figure out. The post office was no help.
The post office didn't even have an updated
They had location. Less information.
We had more information somehow just by Google, you know.
Yeah. So it was gone. We waited. We waited several months and then it was deemed officially lost. And I was like, I can't believe this has happened again.
And because of, you know, sending it overseas, we didn't have insurance on it, or we did have insurance, but it was like for $10, you know, like,
I was like, not important. We were asked, like the factory said, mark it down as low as you can so it slips through. Like, don't put a big insurance on it. Don't make a big fuss over this. We just want this parcel to like slip through.
Yeah.
Nah, that was the worst.
Yeah. I mean, that's just
the opposite happens.
You had it scanned, so you planned for the absolute worst, and the absolute worst happened.
Yeah.
But because we were like at a party and so we forgot about
that.
You know, and he forgot as well. And like, it was months. Just like,
and I think we then sort of stopped. Like we sort of stopped with the idea of making toys and we stopped. We were like, oh, you know, another hindrance, another obstacle to add to the mounting, you know, pile. And I don't even remember the exact timeline. At some point we did go to Japan and I think that was before or after, I'm not sure, but we got the scan back. Like Lewis again, like, oh, like appeared one day and was like with a little zip file and it was like, oh, I found your like scans. I put them on this little zip drive. And that was poor Lewis as well. He ended up losing all of everything off his laptop, like his laptop, like deleted everything.
Yeah.
But we got this, that scan.
And it was like a week or two before that. And oh man.
Very tight.
So yeah, slug gum, we
was resurrected.
Resurrected. And at that stage I was kind of teaching myself Nomad Sculpt because like I had no, like my brain does not think in 3D. But kind of does now, like after being around toys and stuff, I you know, I'm thinking about the mold and like can it be pulled and stuff like that. And so
we went
after
to Japan.
Because
he saw the big kite, because like he'd made this tiny little guy. And then going to Mandarake and places and seeing the size of the kaiju vinyl, and you were like, slug gum has to be kaiju sized. He can't be a little guy. He has to like destroy a city size.
My big inspiration for the size, I'll get it one second.
I love all this. It's like show and tell. That's, and I don't post the videos, so I absolutely love it. Oh, that thing is great.
It is this one.
In Japan.
So Gigamatron.
Yeah.
Jetcher.
He's a beauty.
It's amazing. It's like a snapping turtle. It's got three different heads. It's got like a city on its back. So we went to Superfest, right? And you know, like I just love that toy. in Japan, like, you know, like you get off the plane and you immediately just want to buy every freaking thing that you see, you know, around
in your path.
And that's what she did. I was like, I'll give myself limits.
Special. He was like, I'm gonna get one special vinyl.
One special vinyl, and you know, maybe 50 coffees or whatever, but this was it. Like I saw it, I think I had seen it on Mandrake online before. But yeah, this was it. Like, it was just standing there on a pedestal on at Superfest.
It was the last one left too.
Yeah. It wasn't, the maker who was selling it, but, I saw it and I'm like, this is my big purchase from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been such a big inspiration for me. Like I just can't fault it. It's just so cool. And it wouldn't be like a colorway that I would have initially bought. Like, but I just love it. Like it's, you know, there's something that's just so cool about it. And that was,
and then we
kind
came
of
back
the,
and that was the big inspo. Yeah.
Yeah, the big inspiration for the size. So like next to that one, you know, I wanted to make it
size,
roughly
yeah.
a similar size to that.
Yeah.
And like just so, you know.
He needed to have presence.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people kind of underestimate the size of slug gum, like it, I
yeah,
think
we've
in
had
photos
several,
and
several
stuff,
people write to us and be like, he is so much bigger than we thought.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. They have to have like a separate shelf
yeah.
just for slug gum because he won't fit with the other ones. But, you know, that's I love big soft vinyl toys. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got this one as well. One second. Sorry.
Can you tell he's excited? Can you tell like Japanese
yeah.
soft vinyl really like...
Oh, it rocked your world.
I'm also like... I gave up coffee for like 3 weeks and I'm just drinking a coffee. So I'm also yeah. very caffeinated now.
Yeah. Heck yeah. I mean, I do want to dive into the moss part of this as well, because mm-hmm. those dolls are like really incredible. Oh, anytime they do like some kind of fish kaiju thing, it's wild.
Yeah, we love fish kaiju. This is by 1,000 Tentacles.
Oh, yeah. So
amazing
good.
Artist. And he, I think he had an exhibition recently and it just looked amazing. He had like a big old, like,
he made like
sculpture.
A giant, like, yeah. like human size, bigger than human size version of this.
Yeah, that's great.
We really like lucked out getting this one. I think it was it a lottery system or, yeah, but like amazing.
Oh, I love
beautiful,
it.
Beautiful, like, yeah, beautiful paint job.
And I think with all of the ones that you've shown that you're really into, oops, that's my alarm to wake up. there is an artistry. Like you can see like the artist might have hand sculpted the little scales and things like that.
Yeah.
So even with slug gum, when we got back the file, we didn't just like 3D print that straight away. Like you went in and did a lot of work on the sculpt. And so it is different. Like, so the big slug gum is now different to the original. So it's sort of
yeah.
its own variation.
And I feel like I did have to do quite a bit of, I had to put a bit of thought into the actual like body joints.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make it more circular because like when I sculpted it, it wasn't perfect around the, like mm-hmm. the joint there. So yeah, it was just like quite a big learning curve, like getting slug gum ready for soft vinyl.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, coming back from the fact that these things were lost, having to kind of start that process again after being weighed mm-hmm. down by the worst feeling ever, how do we then launch and then just like, what's the thing that succeeds this time?
Everything happened all at once, as it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So for me, when I was making soft, when I first started trying to make soft vinyl in my toys, and even previous designs that were doll-like, I had the idea that I wanted a toy that was dressable because I could see the benefits of creating something that people would interact with. So Wonder Frogs from Japan, dolls, Blythe dolls, whatever it might be, it has this interaction with your fans and your customers because people will start making clothes for them. And that is always, I thought, was something that to me was really, really inspiring. So I'd always had this idea that I would make my own fashion doll, you know, again, that little girl who couldn't have her own Barbie because they couldn't afford one. I wanted to make my own fashion doll. But that seemed so difficult and so complicated and so far away that all of the other things were almost like I was saying to myself, this is my practice. Like, I'll make a soft vinyl toy, or I'll make a soft vinyl figure, or I'll do this, I'll do that. And that will all be practice that will help me get to finally feeling ready to make the doll. Mm-hmm. So when we were in that moment where we had lost the original sculpt for Slug Gum and we'd lost the new version of the Bryophyte, at that moment it was like, everything else has failed. Let's just make the doll, you know, why not? And that was really, really good, really pushing that for me, and hugely helped. We named her Minty the doll, and everything went right, or like as right as you can when everything else has failed beforehand. And so it was this interesting thing where we started with the most difficult. That was the first success, this articulated fashion doll happened. Like we got her, like we were having like the samples in the mail, and I was like, I can't believe that this is the first thing that's come back to us. Like the thing that I kept pushing off because I thought that would be the dream project, but it was too hard to start with the dream project. Let's start with smaller projects. She was the one that finally succeeded. And I do sort of say I settled all of the past obstacles and all of the past failures. I was sort of saying if I think Slug Gum had succeeded first, or the Bryophyte, or any of my other toys, maybe I would have then launched myself into just focusing on them, and Minty the doll would never have come about. Maybe I would have just kept pushing her away. So the fact that she happened first, and then in absolute quick succession, everything else. So then we made Slug Gum. And at that time, the Crystallified, so the crystal version of my Moss Guy, was potentially going to be made in Japan as well. So we were sort of trialing out a couple of factories, and the Crystallified didn't go ahead in Japan with that particular factory that I was trying to go with. So and so then we just were like, okay, well, let's use the same factory for everything, you know. So we did that. So we had all of our toys made, you know, the same place, and they've just been really, really good to us. So that it just like happened really, really quickly, one after another. And we would sort of save up and order a bunch of different colorways in one go, and then get them, and then, you know, do the next order slowly, trying to like trickle it out. So we've not done that many releases, even though it's been like a full, so much work. So I think Slug Gum we've released in the OG black, and then we did a pink glitter version. And then with the little Crystallified, the clear was the first colorway. And so we're now getting ready to probably think about releasing the next colorway for the Crystallified, and probably the third colorway for Slug Gum. So it then began happening, which is great. So there's still so much to learn, and you know, some of the colorways might not work or whatever it might be. So we're still learning, trying to figure out what is possible, what's not possible, but it's happening, which is great. Yeah. Like this is what we worked towards, like for just to start, and that feeling of it, okay, we can learn on the go now, rather than just being like what will or what won't, with no idea, with nothing tangible or physical to show for it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that that is the, that it didn't stop you from making toys, that it just didn't. Yeah. There's that, I mean, I don't know. Is it a closed door in your path, or is it a door that needs to be broken down? Right. Like that's the thing that we have to kind of weigh in. Yeah. And for you both, it was a door that we're going to chop this thing down because we want this so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think
you just wouldn't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
And it's like also the community, like the toy community, was really like instrumental in keeping us motivated. Like the toy store in Melbourne, like
AJ
especially, Underline Cosmic. So when we had like a 3D print of the actual size of Slugum, like the big size, we took a picture and they were running a Strange Beasts exhibition.
Shows, yeah.
And I think Ben actually reached out to us and was like, would you like to be part of the show? And we're like, we only had the 3D.
Yeah, we were like, we don't have the vinyl toy yet. This is just the prototype. And he was just like, bring it down.
Yeah. Like, so even before it was made in vinyl, it was in a show.
Yeah.
And then literally like the day that we got the soft vinyl slug gums, False Idol Toys.
Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters.
2.75 inch or 182.
19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options.
Quantities of 100
sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now functional.
Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout.
Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSONTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
We reached out to him. He was running Sofubi 101, I think, a show in Richmond. And we were like, oh, man, like, what if we just, we'll just contact him.
Like, what's the worst that can happen?
I saw, like, you know, interviews and stuff, like, hyping it up, like, months before. And I'm like, it's 2 weeks away. Like, let's just write to him. Like, and at that stage, we were going to America over this past
Christmas.
Like Christmas holidays, and we're like, let's make a connection with him. Like, we might be able to meet him, you know. And
Nate was great. He was like, yep, send a toy over, send a slug gum over, and he featured him in the show. I think he told us then he sold on the opening night, which was amazing. You know, such great feedback. First toy, first show, opening night.
And then we got to
meet Nate when we went over and visited America.
Yeah. Such a good dude. And like, we just talked toys and like, it was just great having that connection. And he took us to Toy Lair.
Yeah,
and we met up with Whistling Pony as well, who makes resin toys and like
vinyl.
Yeah, he gave us a vinyl toy that was just amazing. Like he made. Where
did he show you his collection?
Sorry,
No, because he's in New York, but we've seen interviews and we've talked to him, and he's really really great. And we talked a lot because we connected. Yeah, we connected in Japan when we found one of his toy drops. So we found a Jenny in the wild, a Japan Jenny, and then we were able to meet up. And same thing, like he drove like 10 hours from New York down to Richmond in Virginia to meet us. So that was like really, really great. It's just been nice, I think, meeting people through the toy community. Making these connections and hearing other people's successes and like failures as well, and being like, oh yeah, I had difficulty in this way, or because I think a lot of stuff that goes online is really really positive, or it's the successes because you want to like celebrate those, but I think just meeting others through this medium has been really really great, and has anytime we've felt that we would falter prior to this, I think, the community sort of held us together.
Yeah.
Like, don't give up.
Absolutely. Mm. I think that's why I love, like, Toys on Tap has become a love letter back to the toy scene because of how good it was coming into it. And so that's the cool part about that. I mean, with all these hiccups and stuff and then having it now there and it's in the world and you take it to shows, what's next for both of you?
think just continuing to sort of perfect. Like, we'd like to make more sculpts. Like, Nat's been really good. He's designed a whole bunch of other sculpts. And now it's like, we can't make everything. Like, we have to also like not let the imagination run too wild, because you have to sort of think, well, what works? Like, so we've got all sorts of like, I think it'd be so cute to make a small slug gum kind of as a tribute to Godzilla and Manila, like Godzilla's son. And I thought, how cute would that be to have like a, you know, slug gum and like a little version of him.
Yeah.
And same with me, I've made my crystallophyte, but I think it'd be nice to resurrect some of my lost sculpts, some of the ones that failed along the way, and make the bryophyte, and maybe make a couple of the other designs that felt like they would never happen. I kind of like resurrect them from the ashes as well. I think that would be like a really good, like, I got there, I did it, like, feeling. And I'm working really hard on Minty the doll as well. And we're trying to get her to be like quite a professional boxed doll, versus like a lot of soft vinyl is like you create the vinyl toy and it just goes in a bag with a little header card. Whereas we've been working on packaging for her. And so it's those two things. I think it's just staying creative every day. And I think the other big dream that we both have is being able to travel to toy shows with our toys. Like, to me, that's one of the, that would be so fulfilling and such a dream come true. Like I sort of said, like, if I could just dream the perfect life for us, that's what it would be. It would be getting to see other cities in the world. Sorry, I've just been attacked by a cat.
It's okay.
Getting to see other cities in the world, traveling to toy Sotheby's shows, toy shows, with our toys. You know, imagine being able to do a Superfest or something like that in Japan, or some of the like the toy shows in Taipei or places. I think that's the next step, is trying to get enough people to know about our toys where we can do that, where we can make a trip to an event and be there and present our work in person to people on the other side of the world. I think that would,
you know. And we'd also like to, you know, start up something in Sydney. We have some really good toy maker friends in Sydney, and we just don't have the venue. Yeah, we need that like hub for, you know, toy making, and, you know, get some toy jams going and like exhibitions, yeah, like, and stuff.
We'll fly down to Melbourne here and there when we can, but it still is like a big thing to do. And it'll cost, you know, a lot of money to fly down, flights, accommodation, all the rest of it. But like, we love This Is Not a Toy Store in Melbourne, and everything that they're doing for the toy community in Melbourne. They're just too far from us.
Yeah.
We wish they were closer.
We might have an exhibition in the works in Sydney. Yeah,
we'd like to do that. We've got some great toy makers and designers and artists here in Sydney that we would like to bring together. And we do. And we see them a lot at Zine Fair. So we're also working with zines, and we're making our own zine fair in July, and working with risograph. So again, it's like art, but it's similar. Like, we create risographs of our toys. So we've got risograph prints of slug gum and of prawn mouse. And I think being able to tie it all in together will be nice. Like, we've taken slug gums to a few zine fairs, but it's a slightly different crowd. And I think getting all the toy artists together would be nice.
Unreal. It has been so good having both of you on here. I think the hardest part about Toys on Tap is that I can't show the excitement and passion that I get to see in the videos and what toys mean for people. So thank you for sharing that part with me. The last part of every Toys on Tap episode is just a moment where you can share everything about where people can go, get to your toys, all those things. So please share all that stuff.
At the moment, we're mainly using Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to manage all of our toy sales. So it's all under Moss Dolls. So it's Moss Dolls on Instagram. But you can find Prawn Mouse under Prawn Mouse on Instagram. But at the moment, yeah, all of the sales and everything is just via Moss Dolls Instagram. So anyone can write to us on there. And whenever we do a release, we put the information up. We start sort of spruiking it beforehand. And we usually put all the information about like how to email us and what information we would like to see from the collectors when a release goes up and what time it goes up and things like that. So Moss Dolls on Instagram is the main, or not the main, the only the only venue for that at the moment. But yeah, anyone can reach out to us. We're more than happy to chat and talk and share photos, things like that. But yeah, I think maybe in the next couple of weeks, we'll be releasing probably the next colorway for Slug Gum. So that's really exciting. Yep. And then sales will probably go live in kind of like maybe end of June or something like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, we still have black Slug Gums, but we're completely sold out of the,
which is nice,
the glitter pink. So,
but the next colorway is really exciting. I can't wait. I can't wait to share it. It's really fun.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on Toys on Tap.